bringing you the truth behind the news. Welcome to The New American.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Paul Dragoo. We're glad you joined us. Federal district courts are slamming the brakes on the Biden administration's attempt to impose green regulations on heavy-duty vehicles. Also, while Wisconsin's governor just vetoed legislation protecting girls' sports, Oregon is backtracking on idiotic legislation it passed 3 years ago. And in a little bit, John Birch Society researcher Peter Rykowski joins us to discuss action you can take against the WHO's pandemic treaty. We have all that coming up. But first, in case you didn't know it, they're putting drugs in our food. So in Tennessee, the governor is about to sign the vaccine lettuce bill, which will mandate food with vaccine material to be classified as drugs. Now, this isn't a ban on vaccine-laced foods, but the law will require that such things be labeled properly and that people get a prescription before eating it. Now, if this sounds wild, you're not the only one who thinks so. Here's what co-sponsor and Republican Senator Frank Nicely said about it.
Actually, I've been reading about this for a couple of years now, and evidently with this new technology, they can raise this, lettuce is what they're talking about first. They can raise this stuff so cheap. And I've been reading about it, talking about just putting it in lettuce and mass Medicaid everybody like they do with fluoride in the water. I mean, who controls the dose? If you eat a lot of lettuce, you're going to get a lot of mRNA. If you don't eat any, you won't get any. And they're actually talking about other vegetables that they're trying to put this in. And my question is, would this have to be sold at a drugstore? Would you still buy it in a grocery store? Why don't we just outlaw this stuff completely? We don't have any idea what it's going to do to our children, to us, or old people, anything. I mean, this stuff locks out a science fiction movie.
Too bad this isn't science fiction. Drug-laced food has been for years in the making. More than a decade ago, the journal Advance in Biotechnology published an article titled Edible Vaccines, in which researchers bragged about putting vaccines into potatoes, bananas, beans, corn, rice, and lettuce. Maybe they got the idea from the 2002 Protegene scandal. That's when corn and soybean food crops in Nebraska and Iowa were accidentally contaminated with corn that had been genetically modified with a vaccine for pigs. Protegene got a slap on the wrist and had to pay fines. But the company, which now goes by the name Applied Biotechnology Institute, conducts open-air field trials of pharma crops. Now, the federal government, of course, is in on this, too. Scientists at the University of California are trying to implant pathogen-targeting mRNA, just like that used in COVID-19 injections, in edible plants. Now, the question is, why is the federal government funding this type of research if Congress already made adding drugs to food illegal in 2007? The FDA's Amendments Act bars drugs or biological products from being added to food. But there's a caveat. Of course there is. The ban applies unless the FDA has issued a regulation after notice and comment approving the use of such drug or biological product in the food. Well, this should come as no surprise. Last November, the U.S. House voted to stop funding edible plant vaccine research, but Kentucky Republican Congressman Thomas Massey tweeted a month ago that the prohibition was left out of the new omnibus. Meanwhile, in the private sector, a team of researchers from Italy's Evo Biotech company published results in last July's issue of the journal Cells, detailing success in creating an oral mRNA vaccine in edible plants. There's also the Canadian biotechnology company Medicago. Check out this promotional video.
Medicago's manufacturing facility looks like a nursery, but inside these plants, they're growing a new kind of vaccine. The technology is called a virus-like particle.
At Medicago, we use a careful step-by-step process to develop vaccines, using our plants as mini bioreactors. We start with the gene sequence, or code, of a virus. We then use our technology to synthesize the virus code into a real biological product. The code contains genetic instructions that our plants can read, and we insert it into bacteria called Agrobacterium tumefaciens. We submerge the plants in a bath with the bacteria that carries the information into the plant cells. And using a vacuum, we suck out the air between the plant cells and replace it with the liquid. The plants absorb it like a sponge. At the end of their bacterial bath, we return our plants to a carefully controlled greenhouse to let them get on with their natural growing business for at least 4 days. Now the plants will start producing the most important ingredient of our vaccines, virus-like particles.
But it seems like the Tennessee bill was a result of caution. During floor debate, proponents said they didn't even know vaccine-laced foods were already on the market. They were just being proactive. It also seems timely since last December, the FDA published a final rule allowing an exemption from the requirement to obtain informed consent when a clinical investigation poses no more than minimal risks. So join me for today's discussions, our editor-in-chief of the New American Magazine, Gary Benoit, and remotely, senior editor for the New American, Rebecca Terrell. Welcome, everyone.
Hey, Paul.
Hello, Paul.
So I got to say, I feel like the FDA is kind of like this Trojan horse where it pretends that it's like some sort of gift to the people. It regulates medicine, food. But what it does is it actually allows, and it looks like it even makes caveats for these rules to actually allow things that possibly harm us. I think Senator Nicely said it nicely. What's the dose? Who decides this stuff? It's like, why don't we ban it outright? Rebecca, why didn't Tennessee ban it outright? You're a Tennessee citizen. I'm sure you know the answer.
I think that probably that was done to as a political motive to make sure and get a lot of support for this bill. You can always come back later with stronger verbiage, but it was probably expedient for right now because it did pass by an overwhelming majority.
Yeah. I mean, it would be so nice to get others, other states to join in this. I don't know. Do you have any idea if other states in are on this, or could this be one of those roadmaps for other states?
It could be a roadmap for other states. No, I'm not aware of any. I would not be surprised if there is some, because, you know, one of the in floor debate there that we saw with Nicely, another Democrat had mentioned this. I can't imagine this ever happening. Well, you can go on YouTube and see videos like the one that you just showed there of companies telling about what they're doing. I mean, they're proud of their research and development and they're bragging about it. And they've been using this as in the Protogene, what came out in the Protogene scandal, that was in 2002. And that was nothing new. They've been doing this for years for livestock, domesticated animals, farm animals, chickens, not just pigs, but chickens. And so when the animals are eating these foods, how are they affecting us? You know,
right.
And GMO is nothing new either. So it seems like some very gullible naivete to say, oh, this couldn't happen to us.
Right. Well, Gary, you seemed around the age of Mr. Nicely there, and you've seen a lot of things happen over the years. You're a wise old man. Would you ever think that, I mean, that is a good thing, you know, but would you ever think we've gotten to this point? You've been covering legislatures and policies for a while.
Projecting the lines, Paul, we could see it coming, couldn't we? But nonetheless, even though we could see it coming, it's still shocking to be at this point. And I did bring to this program a copy of the Population Bomb.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure a lot of people will recognize the title. It's by Professor or Dr. Paul Ehrlich, who's now a professor emeritus at Stanford University in California. But he wrote this book, The Population Bomb, back in 1968. And that was prior to the original Earth Day, which was at the time called an environmental teach-in in 1970. And this population bomb was warning that we had too many people and that solution was to depopulate. So they were talking about depopulation in a big way back then. But regarding what we're talking right now, I just want to refer to one statement that was made in this book, which was very widely circulated during the original Earth Day. Many of my colleagues feel that some sort of compulsory birth regulation would be necessary to achieve such control. Now, the such control that this is referring to is population control, which is a nice way of saying depopulation. One plan often mentioned involves the addition of temporary sterilants to water supplies or staple food. Now, can you imagine?
Well, the water supplies we got, I mean, like Senator Nicely mentioned there, he mentioned fluoride. That's something we've covered before. I'm glad that you brought that to our attention. It seems like they've told us long ago what's going to happen. And the only people, I think, was American Opinion and maybe a few others who were probably on top of that.
A predecessor publication to the John Birch Society.
Yes. Well, thank you, lady and gentlemen. And after this, we're going to be back and we're going to look at Biden's green agenda that seems to have hit a bump in the road. If we aren't self-reliant, we aren't free. And if we can't take care of ourselves without the so-called help of government, how much liberty do we really have? That's why the New American Magazine has released a special collector's edition bookazine on this very important topic. It's called Self-Reliance, Foundation of Freedom. America has a rich tradition as being the home of staunchly independent explorers, religious dissidents, and general malcontents who seek to live the way humans are intended to, free. It's time to get back to those roots, and living an independent life is key. In our latest special edition, we cover a number of self-reliance-related topics, including the self-sufficiency of the Founding Fathers, self-reliance lessons from COVID, preparing for a worst-case scenario, financial independence, and the importance of community, among many other important topics. The writers are experts in their fields, and they provide a handy guide to get you started. So go to thenewamerican.com/shop and order your copy. Heck, get two. One for you, another for someone you care about. But even better, for $5 more, you can get our entire collector's edition packet, which in addition to the one on self-reliance, includes Trump World and The Great Reset. Again, visit thenewamerican.com/shop, or you can even order by phone at 920-749-3780 Monday through Friday from 8 to 5 p.m. Central Time. That's 920-749-3780. And we're back, folks. Before we went into the next story, Gary, you wanted to add something regarding the last story we did.
Right. The point being that if they can put something into the water supply for birth control to bring about depopulation, what else can they put into the water supply? Could they put mRNA vaccines into the water supply?
Yeah.
And so this is something they've been working at a long time, and it's all about depopulation.
I don't think anything at this point is out of the question. I mean, like the guy, it's lettuce. Lettuce. Who would have thought that they're going to, and it's probably not even just lettuce. I mean, there were, like we had mentioned, there's other vegetables and fruits that they were experimenting with. And I guess what's most worrisome is that rule that the FDA, where it decides that it's going to be the one that decides if it should tell people what it put, because if there's minimal harm or minimal risk posed, they just, they're going to decide not to tell the people. Well, it's like, how credible are they? I mean, we just did a story last week on ivermectin where they had to take down the ivermectin propaganda because it was telling us it was a horse dewormer. So the FDA is not very credible, and I just don't trust them to be the ones who decides whether or not they should tell us when they put the stuff in it. And furthermore, they shouldn't put anything in it.
Well, of course, there should be the individual or the family who decides what they put into their own bodies.
Right, right. You would think, yeah, I mean, you would think that's a no-brainer, but that's not the world we live in. All right, let's look at the next story. Two federal district courts have slammed the brakes on the Biden administration's attempt to impose outrageous regulations on heavy-duty vehicles like trucks and buses. In a case brought by 21 red states, Judge Benjamin Beaton of the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Kentucky on Monday ordered the Federal Highway Administration to stand down. Judge Beaton said the FHA exceeded its authority. He called a new rule that it issued last year arbitrary and capricious. Last November, the FHA set emissions targets for states to impose on vehicles that use the national highway system. The rule mandated that emissions targets over time become more strict and that states regularly report to the FHA their progress. It's all part of Biden's Green New Deal efforts to force people to use electric vehicles, or in reality, to take our vehicles away altogether. Now, Judge Beaton, a Trump appointee, said the rule is unlawful. He accused the agency of attempting to step into the shoes of sovereign states. However, he only blocked the rule. He didn't nullify it. He cited another case decided last week by a U.S. district judge in Texas. The Lone Star State had sued over the same regulation. U.S. District Judge James Wesley Hendricks, also a Trump appointee, said the agency's rule was unauthorized and his decision applies to all states. Texas Republican Attorney General Ken Paxton called it one of the administration's unlawful climate mandates. Kentucky's Attorney General agreed. In a statement issued Tuesday, Russell Coleman said, "President Biden's radical environmental agenda has lost touch with reality." You don't say, huh? Many in Congress think so too, and they're not willing to leave the matter up to the courts. Arkansas Republican Congressman Rick Crawford and North Dakota Republican Senator Kevin Cramer have introduced a bicameral, bipartisan joint resolution of disapproval to nullify the FHWA rule. Now, Crawford, who chairs the House Highways and Transit Subcommittee, called the regulation evidence of the heavy hand of the federal government run amok. Cramer said that nearly half the Senate co-sponsored this resolution from the onset, showing a strong appetite for this rule to be defeated. Dave Bauer, president and CEO of the American Road and Transportation Builders Association, also put out a statement that included this breath of fresh air. The court's ruling, he wrote, uphold one of the law's fundamental principles that states should decide how to pursue transportation solutions that meet their unique needs with minimum interference from Washington, D.C. All right, Rebecca, I'm going to go to you first. Can you help clarify? Okay, so if it didn't nullify the rule, does that mean the previous ruling did, or how does this apply practically?
Yeah, I believe that the previous ruling did. I think that Judge Hendricks had taken care of that for all of the states. But, you know, there's an implied deception in all of this verbiage of these congressmen full of umbrage about how could the federal government overstep its bounds. Really? The entire federal bureaucracy is an overstepping of federal government authority. There is not one federal agency that in existence that is in accord with the Constitution.
That's such a good point, because it's like we report on this all the time. We reported last week, I think, on Johnson being like, he has this verbiage of how, you know, President Biden should do this and this and that to like secure the border. And they act like they so often act like so naive, like you know, like they would otherwise do the right thing, or that this was a mistake. Great point, Rebecca. I mean, what are these people thinking? Have they not realized it? That a lot of this stuff, they do it intentionally. They know it harms it. It doesn't matter to them.
Right, exactly. And so we have to think, okay, that last statement that you read from the CEO, yes, all states are supposed to be able to operate with minimal interference, really no interference from Washington, D.C. We need to get back to the mindset in this country that existed for more than 100 years, where a lot of people didn't even know who the president was because the federal government had such little impact on people's daily lives. In fact, the founding fathers referred to the United States of America as a confederation. They never referred to it as the federation in their writings because they knew that the power was left to the states and to the people respectively. And that's in black and white in our Bill of Rights.
Yeah.
So, you know, anything that's touched by the hand of the fourth branch of government, the federal bureaucracy, it's all actually listed in the Bill of Rights as thou shalt not to the federal government.
Yeah. And everything they touch turns to garbage. That's for sure. To use a very nice word. So where's this heading? I mean, we report on this stuff weekly, almost multiple times a week. And you keep tabs on this. What is your post saying there, Rebecca? Is there going to be finally enough pushback? Are we going to reach a tipping point where this green agenda will finally go to slowly die, or are they eventually going to force it down our throats?
Well, we do still have our Constitution. We do still have states are still sovereign, even though they've. That I'm not sure that people actually understand this.
Yeah, I don't think they know that, some of these people.
I do think the green agenda is going to fall apart one way or another. It has to. The only question is, how does it fall apart? Because what the green agenda alarmists are advocating is something that cannot sustain the civilization that we live
Gary,
in.
Gary, that didn't stop the Soviets for pushing.
Well, but that's my whole point. The green agenda, if implemented, is not going to work. So in that sense, it would fall apart. But let's hope it doesn't take half a century.
Not
as a result of the collapse of our civilization. Let's hope instead it falls apart by people becoming informed and doing something to stop that collapse. And that includes getting away from the green agenda.
Yeah, I mean, but the market is already doing part of that work. people have already refused. It feels like, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, Rebecca, but it feels like we've kind of tapped. We reached the ceiling in the EV market, right? What is it, 7-8% or whatnot? And now a lot of people have realized, one, we can't afford it. Two, those of us who live up here in the north, we can't afford to have one because they're going to freeze. You know, we had a snowstorm yesterday and you know, stuff gets pretty cold and batteries die out. So that's just one of many examples where it seems the market has already spoken. What's your take on the on what's happening in the market?
Well, we already know that the market has spoken. Every company that has an EV line has incurred great losses because of investing in that faulty technology. I say faulty technology because honestly, battery power, if it worked by now, it would be working a lot better and be able to serve these needs. Our industrial economy was not built on the backs of wind, solar, batteries. I don't know if you have any solar applications on your own property. I have a it operates a gate. It operates a gate at the beginning of my property.
And if you got too many days of clouds, the gate doesn't open.
Right. In the winter, yeah. I mean, people think that they're going to be able to heat their homes and, you know, cool their homes in the summer with this technology. It's just, no, people know. People know that because they have practical experience with it. So I don't think it's going to.
Yeah, I think some of it is nice if you're out camping or, you know, the electricity goes out for a couple of days and you have some solar panels and things like that. We've looked at things like that. But on an industrial scale, on a large scale, there's no way. I mean, I used to report on Northwestern in Montana, and they were like, look, what you guys are talking about is crazy. We need coal. We need hydro. We need oil. We're going to come back after this, and we're going to talk about how one state's pushing forward with nonsense and another has had to backtrack.
In 1988, the John Birch Society produced a documentary so predictive, it's as though they had a time machine. Out of Control, Immigration Invasion was produced and hosted by investigative reporter William F. Jasper and looks at the growing problem of unrestricted illegal immigration that, in 1988, already saw upwards of 10 to 20 million illegal aliens within the borders of the U.S. Unknown agents from around the world using the southern border as easy entry. Certainly, some are innocent families escaping hardship, but also certainly some are criminals, potentially terrorists. Is it not appropriate that there be some criteria for the entry of any sovereign nation? Why should the U.S. be different than Canada, Germany, Russia, Japan, or every other country on the planet? Out of Control, Immigration Invasion. Watch this time capsule of prescient wisdom at thenewamerican.com/out of control.
On Tuesday, the governor of Wisconsin vetoed a bill that would have banned girls and boys from mixing in sports. The Republican-controlled legislature had passed the bill because they believe the state should step in and protect women's school sports, and because they recognize that biological differences between male and female bodies are too great to dismiss. Imagine that. But Democratic Governor Tony Evers believes that politics trumps thousands of years of established human biology. With his veto, he displayed his ability to play the perfect stooge for those who push this nonsense onto the public. He justified the veto this way. This type of legislation and the harmful rhetoric beget by pursuing it harms LGBTQ Wisconsinites and kids' mental health, emboldens anti-LGBTQ harassment, bullying, and violence, and threatens the safety and dignity of LGBTQ Wisconsinites, especially our LGBTQ kids. Yeah, he really said LGBTQ that much. The sad irony, of course, is that the trans nonsense that he supports is harming people, including the mentally ill, who are just pawns in the pursuit of an anti-human agenda. Last week, we reported on leaked internal documents from WPATH, the corrupt organization that creates medical standards for trans procedures. The documents confirm that trans procedures are permanently harming people who are too young or too mentally ill, or both, to make these types of decisions. They also reveal that the people responsible for these standards know the long-term harm they're causing. Now, meanwhile, in Oregon, they're actually backtracking on idiotic legislation. On Monday, Oregon's Democratic governor signed a law recriminalizing drug possession. It only took 3 years for reality to override witless utopian ideals. In 2021, Oregon became the first state to decriminalize drug possession. But apparently, that didn't work out too well. As The Hill reported, the state has recently faced a large rise in overdose deaths and had the second highest rate of substance abuse in the U.S. So, How long before states begin backtracking on pro-trans legislation? TNA's Rebecca Terrell, who's with us right now, recently interviewed Landon Starbuck, the producer of the film The War on Children. The documentary exposes the transgender attack being waged against children through education, entertainment, news, politics, big tech, medicine, nonprofits, and the industries that finance them. Here's Starbuck discussing what she learned while working on the movie.
Normal people are sick of this garbage, and they're looking for ways to save their families, to change their children's mindsets, pull them away from indoctrination centers. They're making plans. And, you know, for parents that have pushed back and feel overwhelmed, you know, we all have gone through that. People who are at a place of really recognizing all of this, we all went through that really uncomfortable journey of waking up little by little with COVID and indoctrination of education and all of these things. It's not an easy journey, but there is a point of it where you are empowered. You are left hopeful and empowered because you realize all along you've had this power, and it just took kind of going through this these difficult, you know, periods of realizing that power. And so if every single one of us changed our buying habits, stopped indoctrinating our children, took away social media devices before kids have the digital self-defense skills to withstand the dangers of porn and predators, if we just made these simple changes, we are in power. These people do not have the hold that we have been indoctrinated to think they do over us.
Strong words. Rebecca, you conducted the interview, as I mentioned. I started with that part where she's saying, I felt like it really reflected the way we all feel. We're sick of this garbage. But it seems like Starbuck's message was hopeful, too. I mean, she even used the word hopeful, but I watched your entire interview. Good job. Thank you for getting that done. What other impressions did you get from talking to her and this whole thing as a whole, you know, especially the trans madness? This is another thing that you have reported on extensively. You provide a lot of the research we use here. What is your take?
My take on it is that a lot of parents are simply unaware. They are busy with their lives. They're busy trying to keep food on the table. And I mean, with the soaring inflation that we have now, they're accustomed to trusting the schools to do their jobs. And the schools this is ground zero for this trans agenda coming in. But it's not just in the schools. It's also social media plays a huge part. All of the, everywhere you go, you cannot go anywhere to stores or restaurants, and everywhere you see it just in your face, accepting trans agenda. You have the rainbow, you know, they've stolen the beautiful rainbow, which was God's gift to Noah after the flood. And they've stolen that to mean something perverted. And you see it everywhere, and you see it forced on children. And of course, Target, that's one thing that Landon really pushes for. She says, don't just boycott these places for just a week or a month. It's got to
make
be
it permanent
boycott.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's a good idea.
Right now, she said that the thing is they're being pushed from above. You know, they'll have their IPOs withdrawn, and they won't be able to list on the stock exchange anymore if they don't participate in this DEI, if their DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion scores aren't high enough. And so that's why you see so many corporations backing the Gender Cool Project and Drag Queen Story Hour and the Trevor Project and all of these trans programs that are geared specifically toward youth and even preschoolers. It's just, it's insane. So people need to realize this is that documentary. They're not just blowing smoke. It is a war on children. There are huge guns in their arsenal. Yeah. And people need to realize, turn off the screens, number one, get your kids out of public school. There are alternatives that are available to you. You might think, oh, I can't do that. Yeah, you can.
You have to. You have to get right to a point where you have to realize, and Gary, like we said in our Save Our Children issues, the building, I mean, it's burning. You have to get your kids out. But I wanted to point something else out too. It's this support for trans, LGBTQ, all the nonsense, it's fabricated. The reason I started with Starbuck's first statement being people are sick of this garbage is because there is no majority support. It's fabricated. Like Rebecca said, there's pressure from up top to have these DEI programs. There's pressure from the boards. But on the ground, from the people, the citizens have overwhelmingly said no.
I believe you're absolutely correct about that. But of course, the powers that be want us to think otherwise.
Yes.
They want us to think there's something wrong with us because we believe in traditional morality, which actually is the only morality, upon which civilization and freedom can be built. So that they want us to think that we're the ones who are crazy. But what was so exciting about that interview, the part that you chose for this program, Paul, is the fact that Landon Starbuck is saying, I've been red-pilled. I don't know if she used the actual phrase red-pilled, but I'm awakening. Other people have as a result of COVID, as a result of other people, other things that have happened. The American people are waking up. And that is the hope of our civilization.
Yeah.
The fact that people are waking up.
Yes, it's certainly happening. And I like to think that we are playing a role in that.
Absolutely.
You're at the helm here of a magazine that has been telling the truth. I guess this is a part where we pat ourselves in the back. I didn't mean to get that.
See, we can do that.
They didn't plan us out, but that's part of it. And like she was saying, you have to opt out, not just out of Target and whatnot, but you know, she's in the interview, and I'm not sure if that was included in there too, but she's like, you know, learn to grow your own food. Get a community and things like that. These are things that we should have been doing in the first place. But Rebecca, I guess it's better late than never, right?
Well, yeah, kind of. And it is quite late because this has been going on for much longer. I mean, people think that it just started in maybe 2020. No. And that's why the John Birch Society has been around. That's why Robert Welch founded the John Birch Society back in the 50s to warn people. And he even warned people they're after your cars. And look what's happening. He warned people about the conspiracy. And of course, the CIA demonized that term and made everybody who used the word conspiracy look like a kook. But yeah. Now it's not so kooky after everything that's happened since 2020, is it?
You have a pretty good archive of JBS history in your head. But we did have a program that was aimed at the social depravity that was coming up. And that was Motor Read. Am I correct?
Yes. I'm not sure.
Yes. Move it to restore decency.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know we have internal conversations about perhaps bringing something like that back because that was important. And that I think is actually the foundation of a stable civilized society is to have decency, to have good morals. Yeah,
without morality, you cannot have freedom.
No, absolutely. And that's why they want to destroy it. Thank you, Rebecca. Thank you, Gary. After this, Peter Ratkowski joins us to talk about the WHO's aspirations at a global pandemic treaty.
The John Birch Society has been working tirelessly since 1958 to preserve freedom, safeguard the Constitution, and restore our God-given rights. We continually educate voters and lead the freedom movement. Join us as we work against a tyrannical one-world government. United as one, we can defeat this conspiracy against a free America. JBS founder Robert Welch said, education is our total strategy and truth our only weapon. Join us in restoring this great nation.
The World Health Organization's member nations are about to resume negotiations on a globalist pandemic treaty. And joining me to discuss this is JBS researcher Peter Ratkowski. Hi, Peter Ratkowski.
Hi, Paul Dragu.
So tell us more about this. This is one of those things that just won't go away. Is this the same one that they had last year? And thanks to, I believe it was a collection of African states who said, no way, it was defeated. But you know, you got to give it to the globalists. They are persevering. They have, you know, they're going to keep trying. I wish we had some of that perseverance and diligence on our side or everywhere on our side.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the globalists sure are trying very hard. This is the same treaty. They've been working on it for several years already.
Yeah.
And now they want to actually get it finalized and actually get it passed. So they've set a deadline of May 27th to finish negotiations for the pandemic treaty. Have a final draft completely done just in time for the World Health Assembly to consider it and potentially vote to adopt it in late May.
So what's in it and how does it get adopted and how do we stop it?
Yeah, well, first, we don't know exactly what's in the treaty because they're still working on it. But we have sort of an idea of what's in it because last year they released a draft treaty. So basically, you know, here's an idea of what could be in the treaty. so a draft. But in the treaty, there were some, there were a lot of very, very dangerous, very worrisome provisions. For example, it would allow the WHO to unilaterally declare public health emergencies
around the world.
Right. And if that happened, then the WHO could take charge in directing what countries can and can't do to combat whatever the alleged emergency is. And then it could also, there are also provisions related to vaccine passports, you want to travel across countries. So you wouldn't be able to do that unless you actually prove that you've gotten some type of jab.
Would that only apply to member states?
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, but every country is a member, so it would affect, really? Right.
Wait, every country in the world is a member of WHO?
Yes, possibly minus one or two small countries, but otherwise it's...
Yeah, and we saw them because they partially implemented vaccine passports, especially in Europe, especially in Western Europe and Australia. I'm not sure if they did so in Canada. We saw how well that worked out. That was pretty tyrannical.
Right. Yeah. I mean, vaccine passports, they've already begun implementing them, but this would be basically full implementation worldwide under this treaty. And then it would also another provision, this treaty would basically label any criticism of the WHO or any...
Oh, of course. We got censorship written in it too, huh?
Right. Yeah.
Go on. I'm sorry.
It would be considered misinformation and it would allow public authorities to combat supposed misinformation because it would... Yeah. Create mistrust for...
And we saw what that looked like as well.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what do we have going on in Congress here in the United States? Do we have any bills designed to oppose this, to stop this? What's going on?
Yeah, well, thankfully, there have been many more conservative members in Congress who've been monitoring this very closely, and several really good bills have been introduced. The best one specifically for the WHO is H.R. 79, which is the WHO Withdrawal Act.
Yeah.
And as the name of the bill...
Oh, I like that.
Right, yeah. And as the name of the bill pretty much says, it would take us out of the WHO and also ban us from spending any taxpayer funds for the WHO or any of its activities. So it'd be a really, really great bill.
Who's behind that?
Andy Biggs, U.S. Representative from Arizona, is sponsoring it, and then 54 other U.S. representatives are co-sponsoring it.
That's good. That's a good sign. Okay.
Yeah, and then another thing, so passing a bill like that just to get us out of the WHO will be a great move, but even better would be to get us out of the entire U.N. system whatsoever.
Yeah.
Because the WHO is just one aspect of this huge...
It's one tentacle.
Right.
The octopus monster that is the UN.
Right, yeah. And we can look at basically any UN agency, whether it's the WHO or the World Trade Organization.
UNESCO.
Or UNESCO and so many others. Mm-hmm. And we can look at all the various...
The harms, the destruction that they're causing. I mean, this is the head of the New World Order beast. This is why... This is why Robert Welch, the John Birch Society, I believe in 1962, launched the Get Us Out of the UN action campaign. And it was one of the first ones. Gary corrected me last week because I kept saying it was the first one. Apparently there was another one before, but we don't have it anymore. But we still do have this one. And it's every bit as important today as it was in 1962. And it seems like we have more support for that, at least in the mainstream, at least in Congress, than we've ever had. Unfortunately, I think that also comes about because people are realizing that the things we had worried about are coming true, like they're actually happening. So, you know, it's kind of the silver lining is they realize how harmful it is, but the reality is it's because it's becoming reality.
Right, yeah. It's becoming very blatant, you know, the fact that the UN and the WHO, they are working to become a one world globalist government.
Uh-huh.
And the pandemic treaty is just one example of this. So it's good to see people actually waking up. It's good to see a bill in Congress actually get 54 co-sponsors that would actually get us out of a UN agency.
Yeah. Is there any way, would nullification play into this? For instance, if we live in a state that has leaders who are sane, and could they technically apply nullification even if the United States won't pull out of the WHO? Because that's looking a little unlikely, at least in the next coming months.
Absolutely. Yeah. And in fact, so first off, any treaties need to be consistent with the U.S. Constitution. any treaties that would violate the Constitution or force the federal government or force the states to do things that are unconstitutional, that is not allowed under our Constitution. Article 6 mandates that any laws or any treaties need to be in pursuance of the Constitution. Any treaties that are not are unconstitutional. The WHO treaty would be one example of many examples of an unconstitutional treaty. The states definitely can nullify and should nullify
absolutely
that. And actually, there have been several bills already introduced at the state level that would actually do that. Mm-hmm. So, for example, in states such as South Carolina, Michigan, Louisiana, Idaho, and New Hampshire, legislation is right now in the state legislators that would specifically nullify the WHO and its pandemic treaty.
Good for them.
And actually, just last week, the Louisiana State Senate voted unanimously in favor of a bill that would do that.
Wow.
So it just has to go through the House and get signed by the governor. But states are already introducing bills by that, and more states should actually go about doing that.
This is definitely all good news, but like we often mentioned, we're also in a race against time, and time I don't feel like is on our side. So we have to push forward. Now we have a legislative alert. We're going to pull that up on the screen. And so these legislative alerts that we have, we encourage people to use them, right? And tell us more about that.
Yeah, so we have a couple different legislative alerts for that. One is on the screen. To support H.R. 79 to get us out of the WHO.
Mm-hmm.
And then the state level, we have a legislative alert to nullify the WHO.
Okay.
And then we have individual state alerts supporting the various bills that have already been introduced in the specific states.
Mm-hmm.
So we have several legislative alerts, federal and state, regarding this. And we encourage anyone to go use them to easily contact your congressmen, state legislators, and then share them with others, because other people need to know this and contact their legislators. And by that, we'll be putting even more pressure on them.
They're wonderful. For those who are listening who may have not heard, the legislative alerts, you go to jbs.org, you go to Take Action on the Take Action tab, and you'll see legislative alerts. And you could click on whichever one. You put your zip code there, and it'll get you in touch with your representative, your senator. And there's a template already for what you can say. And of course, we encourage you to tailor it. We also have the phone numbers of representatives or senators, and you can apply pressure. And this is how things work. I mean, we encourage to not only just write emails, but call. Anything else we encourage folks to do, Peter?
Well, schedule in-person meetings with congressmen, state legislators. Give them copies of legislation that have been introduced in other states and tell them, hey, introduce this in your state.
Thank you, Peter.
Co-sponsored.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to New American Daily. And remember to visit newamerican.com for more Truth Behind the News, and we'll see you tomorrow.